This is a JT exclusive interview. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com.
What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for listening or watching a brand new episode of On Air with JT. And of course, as you know, my name is Justin Thomas, but you can call me JT. And again, thank you so much for all of your support. I really, really do appreciate it. You can listen to this show exclusively on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and all of my links and platforms are there. You can also watch the full episodes and clips, behind the scenes, exclusive content at my YouTube channel. Just type in On Air with JT. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and everything is right there. And of course, if you are a business owner, a brand, a company, and you're interested in advertising on this podcast, my social media platforms, and my new podcasts that are launching this year, then send me an email. Of course, serious inquiries only. You can email me at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Enjoy the show. Yes, sir.
You are listening to On Air with JT. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. Caution, you are listening to On Air with JT, a fully uncensored, raw, and unfiltered show. JT doesn't give a fuck. You are listening to On Air with JT, pop culture, news, rants, interviews, serious discussions that the mainstream media won't talk about, and so much more. This is On Air with JT. You are listening to On Air with JT.
How's it going, everybody? You are listening to On Air with JT, and I have a very special interview with Brian Vander Ark, lead singer and songwriter of The Verb Pipe. How are you doing today, Brian?
Doing great. What's happening?
Not much, man. Another day, another dollar, like they say, right?
Yeah, or another stream, which is 0.0005 cents or something.
yeah, that's an interesting.
I had to get a little. I had to get a little dig in there.
Yeah, definitely. So Brian, I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan, and you know, obviously, you know, The Freshman is just an incredible song. You know, I personally put it in my top 50 of all time favorite songs. I feel like it's literally one of the best written songs in the last 25-30 years. That's just my personal opinion. And you know, it's just funny because you know, I was born in '94, and you guys started in, I believe, '92.
Yeah, August of 92 is when we started. Yeah, so you were not even properly conceived.
Nope, I was not. So, like, I discovered, you know, The Verb Pipe.
That was during the foreplay.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly.
Sorry.
No. But, yeah, so, like, you know, I discovered, you know, you guys a little bit later on. I think I was like maybe like 9 or 10 years old, you know, because I've always been into music, and especially like 90s music I just love. So ever since then, I've had The Freshman and the album Villains on from my iPod to my iPhone. You know, I've literally, and I'm not even exaggerating, I probably listened to The Freshman once a day, if not every other day, like, and I have for like the last 15 years. Like, I listen to it so consistently, like it gives me the chills every time I listen to it.
I mean, that's a huge huge compliment when you can, you know, write something. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, when I was writing The Freshman and I was, you know, driving to these stores where I would, I used to work for a music distribution company, and I would drive these long drives and I would have, you know, fast food napkins on the passenger seat, and I would have the music or the idea for The Freshman, and I would work on the lyrics while I was driving, you know, little things here and little notes here and there. And then to, you know, to know that this many years later, it still affects people in the way that it affects you. I'm amazed by that, and thankful, grateful for sure.
Definitely. I can only imagine it. And yeah, it just, one more thing regarding that is just like, you know, especially during my mental health journey and my life, like that song just resonates with me, and it always has. And it even resonated with me during, you know, hard times that I went through even as a child, like, you know, and that, you know, it just shows, you know, how powerful music is. And, you know, obviously you're just such a talented songwriter that, you know, your music has gotten me through rough times. So I just want to say thank you.
You bet. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, of course. So you were born in Grand Rapids, Michigan?
Yeah, I was born in Holland, but you know, Holland is West Michigan. We consider all of the cities in West Michigan to be, and it's a regional community that's, you know, we're really proud of every small town around here. And it's a great, you know, it's a great region of Michigan. You know, there's people that consider the East Side, which is most people in the United States think of Detroit when they think of Michigan. Mm. They don't really know this side of the state, which is, you know, absolutely gorgeous and a great community. Not that Detroit isn't. Detroit's a fantastic city that yeah. you don't know about either. But yeah, so West Michigan is where I'm from and where I grew up for the most part.
Okay. Yeah, I've never been to West Michigan, but I've been to Detroit and I've been to Troy, Michigan.
Yeah, Troy's in that same area.
Oh, okay.
Detroit. Yeah, yeah, you're still on the east side there, which is a great community. It's not, you know, musically speaking, we have a different sound over here than Detroit. You know, Detroit has Eminem and Kid Rock, and it had, you know, I mean, so many bands, you know, history, you got Ted Nugent and Bob Seger, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. you know, West Michigan has always been kind of, you know, during the 90s, it was a scene that was a little more pop sounding, you know, I guess our sensibilities come from pop music, you know, and what we grew up on. The radio stations would, when I was a kid, would play all the top 40, you know, the Elton John songs back in those days when I was growing up in the 70s. And so you learn those kind of pop sensibilities, and you really didn't know about bands like the Stooges or the MC5 or, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a whole different genre and a whole different taste over here than it is in Detroit. It doesn't quite have the edge of Detroit, but it's certainly, the city of Grand Rapids especially has grown exponentially and has, you know, a lot of foodie type restaurants and bars, and, you know, we're beer city again in the United States, you know, for I don't know how many years in a row. You know, because we've got a ton. We have Founders is here. Bells is in Kalamazoo, but West Michigan we consider. So anyway, so I didn't mean to go off on a tangent. I'm just very proud of my community for sure.
Oh, definitely. I see that a lot, you know, and I really respect that. You know, a lot of people, especially like musicians, you know, that come out of Michigan, you know, they proudly represent their city, their state. And I think that's awesome. You know, I think more, you know, city, you know, more people from different cities and states should be more vocal about that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think there's a responsibility when you come from an area, if the city supported you. I mean, there were lines in 92, 93, even in 92 when we first started, because we combined two separate bands that were pretty popular in the state. You know, there are lines around the block for live music, and that's still the case here all these years later. You know, I love what the community has done. And when that happens, when the community is so supportive of you, it's important for you to support the community as well. So you're saying is exactly right.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And you were talking about just listening to music on the radio growing up. Like, what artists, like main artists or bands, really, like looking back now, like really influenced you and made you think, like, this is what I want to do?
I don't think I ever really thought this is what I wanted to do, because it would have been so foreign to me as a kid to think that I could be where I am today. Like, you know, you're from Michigan, you either have to be from New York or Nashville or Los Angeles, you know, to be able to make it. This is way before the Seattle scene, you know.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I ever really thought, wow, I want to be, you know, what I am. I mean, I know I wanted to be a veterinarian. I mean, that was my goal when I was a kid, you know, and then later I was going to be a lawyer, which is why I went to community college to start getting a degree for that. And then subsequently I got a bad, you know, I had a 4-point average, and then I got a bad grade in microeconomics, and I was like, it ruined my grade point average. And I was like,
oh,
man. Fuck it! I'm gonna quit and join a, you know, start a rock and roll band. So,
how old were you when you decided to start the band?
I was older. I mean, I had been in the Army already, so I want to say 20. Yeah, I was like 27, 26, okay. 27. Yeah.
Okay. So to follow up with that, because today's actually my birthday, and I'm 29, and I'm
what? Yeah. Happy birthday! Thank what you. Are you doing working on your birthday? Are you insane?
That's just who I am. I gotta keep working until I get to where I want to be in life. But my question to you is, maybe, you know, you have some great advice. You know, since you started a little bit later, and I want to talk to you about your acting career as well. You know, I actually I live in Boston. I'm from Boston, but I'm going to make that move to LA to pursue an acting career. And I know I'm a little bit older than, you know, people that are, you know, like an 18-year-old or a child star that's going into the business. Did you ever feel like, since you were starting a little bit later, that did you have like any self-doubt, or were you
great
just
question.
You're so confident?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't. I was always concerned about the age thing, because we didn't get signed until, God, I was 31 or 32 when we got signed.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I was really concerned about it. So that's that would have been a legitimate concern, I think, because yeah, there were so many other young bands and I had gotten my big break from Willie Nelson, not my big break, but I got a break from Willie Nelson because he had heard a demo. I'd given him a demo of mine when I met him. Probably 25 at the time. And so that's one of those things that, you know, it's a real shot in the arm to say, well, wow, Willie Nelson really loves this song. He asked me to come play at Farm Aid 4. So I did that when I was, I was probably 25 or 26 when I did that. So that kind of thing gives you a little shot in the arm. And then you think, okay, well, maybe I can do this. And so you keep working and working and working. You know, if I hadn't gotten that boost from Willie Nelson, I might have given up. In fact, I remember I was 29 and we were still having problems. Every single record label was passing on us. We'd had maybe 7 or 8 come out to see us. They all passed.
Wow.
And I told my girlfriend at the time, I said, if I don't do it by the time I'm 30, then that's it. I'm going to go back to pursuing being an attorney or something. And for my 30th birthday, she got me a 4-track recorder.
Wow.
Like the smartest, most insanely thoughtful gift I think I've ever gotten in my life.
Right.
Was that 4-track recorder, because it got me interested in recording and everything. And it was her way of saying, listen, don't give up because you're your age.
Wow, she really believed in you, and it definitely paid off.
Yeah, she did.
And during that time, you know, just because you mentioned you were around like 25, 26 when you got, you know, that recognition from Willie Nelson, but didn't get that deal until like 31, you know, even though, you know, that's 5-6 years, you know, and obviously as a, you know, a talented musician, creator, artist, you know, you know people that are talented and creative, they know what they're capable and their potential is. So did you have like during that time, did you have like a little bit of frustration at like how the system is built, like the music industry? I'm just like,
sure,
the,
of course,
the politics of it and all of that, just because, you know, deep down, I got this, I can do, you know, I can make great music, we can make it. But then, you know, just,
well, I don't think, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But I don't think I was ever concerned with the politics of it. You don't really know the politics of it until you're in it. What I was concerned with was what the nation was listening to. Okay. I was, you know, this is the late 80s, early 90s, those first bands that I was in. And like I said before, I worked for a national distribution company. So we would go from store to store and we would restock shelves full of music. And the music that I was restocking was, and I'm not shitting you, I would go in one day, I'd drive an hour and a half, get to a Walmart, you know, I believe in South Haven, Michigan, right? And there would be boxes and boxes and boxes of Vanilla Ice and Paula Abdul and New Kids on the Block. Cassettes, and there'd be so many of them that I would have to stack them on top of the shelves almost to the ceiling.
Wow.
And then I would get called back into the store a couple of days later that they're out of them again. And if anything is more disheartening than that, I don't know what it is, because it was like, oh my God, why are people listening to this? Now I see the value of it now, because I'm old enough to know that there is value in that kind of music. It makes you happy. But back then it was like, oh, nobody's ever gonna like, you know, what I'm doing. And then, you know, I'm working a painting job in Gull Lake, Michigan. And we used to, it was like a three-story job and had a giant TV, and the people that owned it were were gone all day. So we would just crank MTV, you know. And all of a sudden I heard this guitar riff and the bombast of the bass and drums kick in. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this? And, I take the sheet of plastic off the TV, you know, from our, you know, painting, and, just to see what's going on. And when I see this moppy headed blonde kid and cheerleaders in black, and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh,
and I was,
wow,
like, oh my God, thank God, something is happening here. And I went out and bought that album, and I listened to it incessantly for months and just studied it, loved it. It was just like, oh my God, is this the way music is going? And sure enough, it did. And it came more in my direction, in our direction. And that's when the big break after that happened, you know. So,
wow, that's really insane. Was there... I'm sure there was many defining moments, but if you had to pick one defining moment when everything was like starting to happen, and like, was there a defining moment where you like, oh shit, like this is really starting to fucking happen. Like this is coming true. Like this, my dream.
Yeah. For my band.
Yeah. Or just, yeah, personally, well, I think, like, you know,
I think that when I realized that it was, you know, there's a potential that this could really happen, was when RCA came out for the second time to see us, because they had passed the first time, and then they sent Brian Maloof, who ended up being our A&R man for quite a few years. He came out to a show that was sold out in Kalamazoo. I think we had a couple nights at this place called Club Soda. And by that time we had kind of given up on, we were going to just have our own machine going. We were going to do our own thing. We felt like we could be the Grateful Dead and kind of like kind of like ride it as a business and like, you know, figure things out on our own. And he came out and we were like, he came back to say hi. And we're like, oh, great. Another record rep is going to say, no, I don't hear a single or whatever. But he came back afterwards. We had a very exciting show and he came back afterwards and he had made a set list, an impromptu set list of the songs. And he started discussing the songs with us. And I'm like, whoa, this is the first time we've had an A&R rep go, hey, this song sounds great. If you did it, you know, if you wrote a new bridge for it or something, this kind of thing, you know? And then he was like, the song, The Freshman, that's the one, right? Everybody knew every word, you know, and there's, you know, 500 people packed in that place. And then I, you know, we gave him a new demo tape with the song Photograph on it. And myself was on there and Drive You Mild. And then a couple days later, he called and said, yeah, this is going to be a done deal. We need to do it. So wow. I think having that after, right after we got off stage and he was back there with his notepad, that I think is the defining moment for me where I was like, holy shit, maybe we just found ourselves the right label.
Wow, that's awesome. That must have been so surreal. Now, did every label, every major record label, or most of them hear the demo of The Freshman and pass on it at first?
Yeah, everybody heard it. Everybody saw everybody singing along. I mean, these were all packed shows back then, and everybody sang The Freshman, and they still kept passing. I mean, Atlantic jumped on board after RCA did.
So it was kind of like a
bidding war. They wanted to sign us. Yeah, well, we had a really nice bidding war between Atlantic. It was Lava at that time.
Okay.
And RCA. Yeah, and we definitely played that to our advantage.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Right.
So, you know, over the years, you know, you guys released, I believe you, in 2021, you guys released the ninth album or 12th studio album? I'm sorry.
Oh, man. I don't know either. Honestly, I'd have to look at the discography.
I was looking at it. I was rereading it, and there's just so much because you have all the solo albums.
We had two albums before we got signed, and then three albums, or five albums, and then we did Overboard 6, Parachute 7, 8. The two kids records. So yeah, I think 10 or 11.
Okay. Well, that's a good amount of music.
Would have been. Yeah, we're working on another one too. We're going to do pre-production here in a couple weeks. So
awesome. You know, I can't wait.
Keep writing.
I can't wait to hear that. So out of all, I read somewhere that you played over like something like 800 shows or something.
Oh,
like that.
Yeah.
I was curious about that.
I was trying to find my footing after, you know, Underneath was our album that was released on 9/11. So, and that was, I thought, one of our strongest records. And so I was really disappointed. And I think AJ, our guitarist, quit at that point. My brother quit, Brad quit. And I was like, oh, what are we going to do? And I'm like, I had just gotten married and we weren't making any money. I wasn't making any money. I got to figure out what to do. And some woman booked me. A woman booked me at to play her birthday party. I was like, oh, I don't usually do birthday parties or whatever. And she said, I'll pay you $2,500. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I'll be right there.
Right.
And I went, and it was awesome. It was amazing. I mean, she put up 50 folding chairs. This is like, you know, 2007. So the house concert idea hadn't taken hold. I mean, now you could, I mean, house concerts are everywhere.
Yeah.
Because people realize that it's, you know, it's a great way to hear live music. So once I played hers, I'm like, oh, I sent an email out and I said, hey, book me into your home. We'll bypass the middleman, you know. I'll consider any offer. I'll play all the songs you want to play and stay for an hour for autographs and pictures and teach your kid a couple of guitar chords. And I sent that email. The next day I booked like 52 shows.
Wow.
And I would book shows. I'd do two or three a day on the weekends, up to four on the weekends till I realized my voice couldn't handle it by the end of the day. But I would go from show to show to show just in the summer months, because I only did this in the summer. So over the course of, you know, 13, 14 years, of doing that, yeah, I figured out, wow, I've done over 800 house concerts, you know, before I, you know, then the band started taking off again a few years ago, right before COVID, and I had to retire the series because I couldn't do the rock shows and do the house concerts at the same time. It was like killing my voice.
No, I can only imagine.
But yeah, over 800. So yeah, that, over 800
that's
shows.
Insane.
Amazing.
And during like those, all those shows and, you know, having those like intimate, you know, small performances kind of, in, you know, obviously having conversations with, you know, fans and people that, you know, grew up listening and still listen, like, I'm sure there were moments where you're like, wow, my music has really like touched so many people. Like just having these interactions with like people and, you know, whether it was before you did the, you know, the home show or after and, you know, signing autographs, you're like, wow, like they, it just must be a great feeling.
Well, I mean, it is a great feeling. There's also some pressure too, you know, to maintain the level of quality in the songwriting. Mm-hmm. And that pressure, you know, Channing Lee, who writes with me now, she's my writing partner and has been for the last few years. You know, she wrote the last record with me. You know, we talk about that, you know, she'll write something and I'll go, ah, it's not quite there, Channing, you know, and I'll write something and she'll go, no, I think you could say it better if you did this. So we work on each other's lyrics because people expect the lyrics to mean something, you know, and that's so important to both of us.
Definitely.
It was important to her with her, you know, with her group, and it's important to me with my group. And so that standard is really high and there's a lot of pressure because you want to write something and you wonder, wow, that person that really loved our song Penny is Poison, really, we want them to really love this song too, you know, for the same reasons, you know. So it's a bar that's set, so you don't really, I don't really ever sit back and go, wow, I've touched so many people. Mm-hmm. I think about how can I touch them again in some way, where can I take them in my journey and have them come along with me. And fortunately, you know, it's been getting better and better and better. I think the songwriting is getting better and I think that the shows are getting better. You know, we're selling out shows again. So it's because, you know, I feel like we've got a really great live band. My brother Brad, who quit in 2001, rejoined the band 3 or 4 years ago because of this resurgence. And
that's awesome.
And yeah, so I mean, you know, I mean, it's a trajectory that's on its way up, but you know, I'm I suffer from anxiety and these are the kind of things, you know, I worry about, well, you know, what are we going to do when I'm, you know, when I'm 60, am I still going to be doing this? And I think, mm-hmm. yeah, why would I quit? You know, yeah. We could still make records and still finance our own, you know, our own deal without having a record label. And, you know, so I would never quit it.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
I really like that point of view. I really do. And Brian, I only have a couple more questions. I don't want to take up too much of your time. But when you like sign the deal with, you know, the label and you know, really quote unquote made it, did you receive any really good advice maybe from like a musician in the industry or maybe like an executive, and you don't have to say their name if you don't want to, but some kind of advice that like really stuck with it, like still resonates to you till this day?
I wish I could give you a great quote here, but I got to tell you, because we were from Michigan and we didn't really know anything about the industry, and we really kind of only did our own thing and tried to make our own way and tried to do our own merchandise and all that. I don't remember anybody ever really giving me advice. I do remember things like Willie Nelson saying to me, he wrote me a letter and said, you're a great songwriter, keep at it, or something like that.
Wow.
These little moments where Gene Simmons asked us to go on tour with Kiss because he loved the album Villains, you know, he had an advance copy. So little things like that are what boosted me to keep going and motivated me to keep going. I can't think of anybody that ever gave us advice, hey, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this.
Yeah.
And we always had to figure it out, and we made a ton of mistakes along the way, a ton. But you know, I wish someone back then would have told me, listen, don't fight the record label so much. Just work with the record label. They're all on your side, you know, but we fought the record label all the time. And these were mistakes that we made, and we've, you know, I learned from them. So yeah, there was no real advice other than Gene Simmons saying, whenever you sign something, don't personalize it because it's worth more money. But, you know, these are little things where it's like, I mean, it's worth more money, yes, but you know, how wonderful is it that you've made an autograph out to the person who's asked for it?
Yeah.
To me, that's invaluable.
Yeah, you know? I think anyway, so too. So. But that's still really cool to have those interactions with Willie Nelson and
Of course. That's that was one of the great things about it, was talking to Smokey Robinson and these other guys that I've loved when I was a kid, you know, and getting to meet the REM guys, and you know, it's like, dude, I mean, that's what life is all about when you're in rock and roll too, is the extras besides the music.
You know? Yeah, definitely, yeah, 100%. So what made you kind of get into acting? Were you always like interested in acting, or was it something that kind of came later on?
I mean, school plays and that kind of thing. And then once the band had gotten some notoriety, I got in with a group of independent filmmakers who, you know, just, they knew how to work a camera. They knew how to, you know, write a script and, you know, and so I got in with this group and then just started doing little cameos here and there, little small parts, and then got into it a little more later, got an agent, that kind of thing. But, you know, my filmography is, it's very limited. Yeah, I haven't done much in a long time. I still write short films and, you know, won some awards for screenplays and at film festivals and that kind of thing, and still had the same group of friends that I had, you know, back then 30 years ago. Wow. And we still make little movies and do it really kind of more for our own enjoyment.
So. Yeah. And one last question, Brian, you know, since you've been in the music industry, you know, for 30 years, you know, 30 plus years, and obviously the music industry has has changed so much, you know, so much, but just like in terms of like, even when, you know, like villains and just with album sales and you know, and now with everything, like how you kind of, you know, you talked about at the beginning about the streaming, and like, what's your thoughts on, you know, is there any, I don't want to say the word frustration, but like, just because of how unfair, like, because the percentage of, you know, what artists get off streams are so low, and you know, compared to, you know, I just remember growing up, you know in the, you know, early 2000s, and me as a kid going into, you know, record stores and buying CDs and albums, and you know, that was 25-30 bucks, you know, sometimes, and you know, people can just stream your music, and you know, and I know it's not all about money and everything, but like, just from that kind of aspect, from the streaming, like, what's your thoughts on, about that?
I mean, it's terrible, but you can't fight it. Yeah. I mean, music is essentially free now. I mean, there's no, once something is free, you can never charge for it again. For instance, the internet. Remember, they were going to charge, somebody was going to charge for the internet, you know, 20 years ago. And they said, you know, there has to be a fee just to use it. Of course, you have to pay for, you know, broadband or whatever now. But,
yeah,
you know, you can't fight it. So what do? You find ways to supplement income, which is what I do. I do corporate speaking. I do a little acting here and there. You know, I try to write music for other people. You know, I mean, these are all things that I try to do. I produce other artists, you know, just to maintain a living, you know, and that's the only way to do it. Any young musician out there who thinks you get signed to a record label and then that's it for you, you're golden, you've made it, is a rude awakening coming. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, even though I do, you know, I do have one of those songs that I wrote, two of the songs, I mean, the song Colorful does really well as well from the movie Rockstar. These two songs, you know, I get, you know, the checks I get for them are minimal at best. They don't even pay the mortgage. But having my own Patreon page, you know, and having that supportive group there, that actually pays the mortgage. So you have to figure out ways to, you know, supplement the income. And because there's no fighting it. You know, there's no way you're going to win. It's like, you know, Pearl Jam against Ticketmaster years ago. It's like, that's awesome that you fight it and you got a great reputation for being the ones that fought it. But ultimately, who's going to win? And it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
so supplemental income. That's what I preach.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely take some notes from that because multiple sources of income is, you know, the best way. Brian, is there any upcoming projects or shows that you have?
Yeah, we've got a tour coming up in April, March and April, happening. And we're all over the Northeast and the Southeast United States and the Midwest. And then, like I said, we're going to go into the studio for pre-production for a new record. Everybody's got new ideas, and so we're going to do that. And I'm hoping that album is going to come out this summer, late summer. And then Villains is going to be released on vinyl too in April, so that's exciting.
Oh, wow, I'm definitely going to buy a copy of that. I need that. And if you come near Boston, you know, you said you're coming to the Northeast, I'll definitely be at that show.
Awesome. Yeah. Sounds good.
And you can definitely check out Brian Vander Ark at brianvanderark.com. Brian, thank you so much. It was an honor to talk to you, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to do this interview. I'm very grateful.
You bet, Justin.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for listening or watching a brand new episode of On Air with JT. And of course, as you know, my name is Justin Thomas, but you can call me JT. And again, thank you so much for all of your support. I really, really do appreciate it. You can listen to this show exclusively on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and all of my links and platforms are there. You can also watch the full episodes and clips, behind the scenes, exclusive content at my YouTube channel. Just type in On Air with JT. Just head over to onairwithjt.com and everything is right there. And of course, if you are a business owner, a brand, a company, and you're interested in advertising on this podcast, my social media platforms, and my new podcasts that are launching this year, then send me an email. Of course, serious inquiries only. You can email me at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Enjoy the show. Yes, sir.
You are listening to On Air with JT. If you are a business owner, brand, company, or anyone selling a product and you want to advertise on this podcast, email the show directly at onairwithjt@gmail.com. We are offering extremely low rates for a limited time. Once again, email the show at onairwithjt@gmail.com. Listen to On Air with JT on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Go to onairwithjt.com. Caution, you are listening to On Air with JT, a fully uncensored, raw, and unfiltered show. JT doesn't give a fuck. You are listening to On Air with JT. Pop culture, news, rants, interviews, serious discussions that the mainstream media won't talk about, and so much more. This is On Air with JT. You are listening to On Air with JT.